Today is Wednesday, April 18th. We're going to work on the Florida electrolyte balance and do some exam review. Okay, so on pages 121 to 123, let's review the process of filtration and reabsorption at capillaries. Normally, which pressure is responsible for filtration at a capillary?
Arterial end.
And which pressure is responsible?
Hydrostatic.
Good. Okay, so how is it that hydrostatic pressure can be effective? It has to be greater than or less than osmotic pressure at this end. It's got to be greater than, right? What effect does osmotic pressure have on the push-pull environment here? Is it the pusher of fluids or is it the one that attracts and pulls fluids?
Pulls,
good. So what creates that osmotic pressure?
Salts and proteins,
good. So salts, proteins, electrolytes, I'm using all those terms interchangeably. That means those items that create the osmotic pressure that pulls fluids back in at this arterial end. And since osmotic pressure is lower than hydrostatic, we're not going to be able to pull those fluids here at this end of the capillary. By the time you reach the venule end of your capillary, what has happened to hydrostatic pressure?
It's gotten lower.
It's gotten lower, good. So why did it decrease?
Because the force of the pressure is lower.
The force is lower, and where'd all those fluids go? Out. Yeah, you end up pushing them into that interstitial space. So since our hydrostatic pressure is now lower, the osmotic pressure can exert its effects. So osmotic pressure is going to pull and return fluids back into the venule end of our capillary. What do we call the name of this process of returning fluids?
Reabsorption.
Good. Reabsorption. And which pressure is responsible?
Osmotic,
good. All right, so we know that only about 90% of those fluids get picked up by the venule end of your capillary. What happens to the remaining 10% of fluids?
It goes on out of the body.
Lymphatic system, yeah. So lymphatic system is hanging out in your interstitial space. It picks up those escaped fluids, okay? So this scenario is the ideal situation. We expect to have the push of hydrostatic pressure at the arterial end. We expect to have the pull of osmotic pressure at the venule end. So the balance here is between the fluids in your blood vessel and the electrolytes and proteins in your blood vessel. Anything that alters the balance of that ratio between fluids and electrolytes, and we're going to end up altering our push-pull mechanism here. Okay, so we talked in class on Monday about three different types of dehydration. The key to keeping this straight is to keep in mind that dehydration means loss. So we're looking at what we're primarily losing from the bloodstream. Isotonic dehydration was the easy case. What are we losing in equal amounts?
Both fluids and solutes,
right? So, in fact, we lose equal amounts of BOP and BHP. So, there's not a great change in our overall net movement of fluids. We're still able to filter. We're still able to reabsorb. So, just like isotonic solutions around cells, there's really no net change here in our ability to do this push-pull mechanism. All right, so the interesting stuff comes when you have a fluid and electrolyte shift that results in hypotonic and hypertonic dehydration. With hypotonic dehydration, what are we losing?
Sodium,
proteins, salt, solutes, and we're losing that from the bloodstream. So if you lose salt, sodium, proteins, electrolytes, what pressure do you decrease?
BOP,
right. So it's not necessarily that you're unable to filter, it's that you're unable to do what?
To reabsorb properly.
Reabsorb, right. So you may in fact still be filtering along the entire length of your capillary, and so we need to figure out how fluids are affected. Because we've lost our ability to reabsorb, we notice that fluids are continued to be pushed out of the capillary. They first enter the interstitial space, and they cause swelling there, known as what? Edema. Good. So we'll add that word. And of course, if this fluid is hypotonic that's being moved out, what happens to your cells ultimately?
They swell.
They swell and bloat. Good.
Eventually rupture.
It could rupture, you're right. Okay, so come test time, I'll give you some clues. I'll say to you, you know, we've got this problem that causes a loss of salt from the bloodstream, or I'll say, you know, we've got a hepatitis issue, we've got a loss of proteins from the bloodstream. You're looking for loss of proteins, loss of salt, loss of solutes, loss of electrolytes.
That would be the BOP.
BOP, that's right.
Because if there's a loss of salts and all, well, that's going to affect
BOP. BOP, right. Any electrolyte, salt, solute, protein, BOP is going to be our problem. Okay? And so you automatically know when you lose BOP, your difficulty is in reabsorption of fluids. So they tend to be pushed out into the capillary, from the capillary rather, into interstitial space, and then finally into the cell. Okay. Let's turn and talk about hypertonic dehydration. This form of dehydration, again, is some type of loss from the bloodstream, but this time it's fluid loss from the bloodstream. So, you know, there's a lot of things here that can induce fluid loss. Diabetes mellitus can cause us to lose fluids. Diabetes insipidus can cause us to lose fluids. So if you're talking about fluid loss from the bloodstream, which pressure is now affected?
BHP,
that's hydrostatic, good. So this time, hydrostatics are pushing pressure. And if you're unable to push, you're unable to filter, and you're more likely to do what?
Become
dehydrated. Yeah, honest to goodness dehydration, right? So we pull fluids from interstitial space and the cell. We pull those fluids back into the capillary, okay? And once back in the capillary, those fluids travel to your kidneys. Your kidneys say, look at all this extra fluid, get rid of this stuff, and so it leaves in your urine. And that's unfortunate because what we're left with is shriveled up cells. So I'll just make a little note here that cells will shrivel.
So basically the fluids are just doing the reverse of each other.
That is exactly right. So most of the time, I'm going to give you a clue. There's a couple of situations where you're going to need to know what's going on. If I said we had problems with aldosterone and you had less aldosterone than you should, is that going to primarily affect sodium reabsorption or water reabsorption?
Sodium.
Sodium. And then what pressure do you affect?
BOP.
BOP, yes. So if you've got an aldosterone issue, you're going to have a BOP issue, right? Let's look at another one. If you have too little ADH, you're not going to reabsorb enough what from the kidneys? Water.
That's going to affect BAP.
Yep, that's your BHP. So that's a hypertonic dehydration. Okay, so for things like aldosterone and ADH, I may not give you clues. Diabetes mellitus and diabetes insipidus, I may not give you clues. What do we tend to lose a lot of with both those diabetes?
Fluids.
Fluids and water, yeah. And so polydipsia, polyuria, we know those are classic signs for both forms of diabetes. So again, if you're losing water, what type of pressure do you lose?
Hydrostatic.
Hydrostatic, and you're looking at what type of dehydration?
Hypertonic.
Good. If I say to you that, go ahead,
Tiffany. Can you say that about aldosterone and ADH?
Sure. If you've got an aldosterone problem where you're not making enough aldosterone, then aldosterone's job is to retain sodium. So if you don't have enough aldosterone, you're not going to retain enough sodium. That's going to impact BOP. And that's going to impact really causing hypotonic dehydration. Okay. And if you're looking at, say, an ADH issue, ADH's job is to retain water. And so without enough water, you're going to lose BHP. And that's now a hypertonic dehydration issue.
And which one was the diabetes?
Diabetes are both forms, whether it's mellitus or insipidus, both forms are hypertonic dehydration because you're losing water. Okay, so both forms of diabetes are hypertonic dehydration since we're losing water. Just something to appreciate. Where's most of our calcium stored?
In your bones.
In your bones. So if you have a PTH or a calcitonin problem, is that really going to affect this kind of push-pull fluid movement?
No.
Not really. Yeah, so the bigger issues here, things like sodium, proteins, other electrolytes. Yeah. Okay, one more thing was overhydration. That was something else we talked about in here. Overhydration means that we have too much of something. And, you know, usually they just shorten it to being a hydration issue. Different forms of overhydration, but we only focused on one form, and that was hypotonic overhydration, and we just shortened it to hypotonic hydration. In other words, the other name for hypotonic hydration is water intoxication. Hypotonic hydration or water intoxication when people take in hypotonic fluids that don't have enough salts or solutes or proteins in them. So in this case, if you're taking in too many fluids, what pressure do we increase?
We'll increase your hydrostatic.
Yeah, increase that hydrostatic pressure. Let me show you a helpful trick. If you're getting too many fluids and not enough salts and proteins, what pressure also decreases right now? Osmotic. Yeah. Now, got a match? What does hypotonic hydration match? Hypotonic dehydration. Good. Yeah. So catch this. Circle it in a different color. If you increase your fluids, that's doing the same thing as decreasing your salts and proteins. So if I passed out gallons of water and we all drank up, no salt, no protein in that water means we're just getting fluids increasing BHP. We're not getting the salts and proteins, so we're in effect decreasing our blood osmotic pressure. So when you think about hypotonic hydration and dehydration, they have something in common. Because it's too much fluid and not enough salts to do the balancing. So what do we primarily affect if we have higher hydrostatic pressure? Do we affect our ability to push and filter or reabsorb and pull? Yeah, you're pushing, right? So are you able to reabsorb as much if you have a higher hydrostatic pressure?
Not nearly as much.
Not nearly as much. So you're filtering like crazy. It's a huge push out. So into what space do we push our fluids first?
Into the IF.
Yeah, IF.
Into the IC.
That's it. And so what happens to those cells and those tissues?
They go and bloat.
They bloat, yep. All right, so in fact, hypotonic hydration and hypotonic dehydration end up with the same issue. You're filtering like crazy, you're not able to reabsorb, and so fluids enter the interstitial space, making it swell. And then finally, they push into the cells and tissues and make them bloat. All right. So just want to recap that. I think maybe hearing it a second time helps to fill in some gaps of information there. And then let's work through some more of those problems on page 124. Okay, so I know we did number 2. I believe we did number 3, if I'm not mistaken. Let's take a look at number 4. Okay, so when you lose blood, blood is only 5 liters of all this fluid in your body. So primarily the issue when we lose blood is not necessarily the fluid that we're losing, but rather the proteins that we're losing. So when you lose blood proteins, what pressure is being lost?
BOP.
BOP, osmotic, good. So for number 4, we're losing blood osmotic pressure. So now it's decision time. Is this a dehydration problem or an overhydration problem? It is hypotonic, it is dehydration. And the reason it's dehydration is because of what you're losing. You're losing proteins. Loss is dehydration, gain is overhydration. Okay, so yeah, this is a hypotonic dehydration issue. And can you describe the fluid movement? Good. From the capillary, we push fluids into the IF.
And then to the ICF.
And then to the ICF. Good. Okay, so number 4 is loss of BOP. It's hypotonic dehydration. Fluids move from the capillary to the IF to the ICF. Give you a moment to look at number 5. Yes. How do you know number 5 is the same thing? Yeah, loss of blood proteins. Good. All right, it's the same problem here. Loss of BOP. This is a hypotonic dehydration problem. And the fluids move in the same direction. Good, capillary IF to the ICF. So you may recall we looked at pictures of lymphedema, swollen arms and swollen legs. If you do have a blockage in a lymphatic vessel, you can't get the proteins back that might have escaped the blood capillary.
Could you describe like what an isotonic would be?
Isotonic is a one-off case of diarrhea, vomiting, a small bleed, or it could be fasting. But it's all one-off instances. It's not extensive. So one-off case of vomiting, diarrhea, a small bleed, or fasting. One-off case, but there's no major shift in fluid movement because you're losing equal amounts of salt, solutes, and fluid. Yeah. If that turns into an evening of vomiting, then now you've got hypotonic dehydration because you're losing electrolytes. All right. number six, what is your clue there?
Loss of fluids.
Loss of fluids, good. And this is what type of pressure that we're losing?
BHP
hydrostatic.
It's hypertonic.
It's hypertonic dehydration.
From the ICF to the IF to the capillary.
Good, you got it. Good. So from the ICF to the IF to the capillary. Number seven says loss of blood sodium. What pressure?
BOP. Hypertonic dehydration.
Hypertonic dehydration.
The capillary carries the IF and then the ICF.
You got it, good. Capillary to the IF to the ICF. Now, is this going to make your cells bloat or shrivel?
Bloat them.
Yeah. So move it out to the interstitial space can make those cells eventually bloat. So number seven, it says hyponatremia. What specifically does that mean?
Low salt.
Low salt, right. And what hormone do we probably think is causing this?
Aldosterone.
Good. Let's see, number eight says high blood pressure. And the issue is, if you've got high blood pressure, this is coming full circle, blood pressure primarily depends on cardiac output. Cardiac output primarily depends on the fluids in your bloodstream. So you may have more fluid, but it's the problem of an imbalance of not enough salt.
So it's going to be overhydration?
In a way, it's kind of like overhydration, but the results are the same because, well, hypo. And the reason is if you don't have enough salt to balance your water, you're pushing fluids out into the interstitial space. Okay. So it is a hypertonic dehydration problem. And the issue here is too little BOP. Okay, so how do fluids move for number eight?
Capillary to IF
to the ICF, good.
And that was hypotonic?
It is hypotonic dehydration. So thinking way back, we talked about left side and right side heart failure. We often talked about swelling of either extremities like fingers and toes and ankles and wrist. This is where it comes from because high blood pressure forces the fluids out and you can't pull them back in. So we kind of come full circle with that conversation. All right, number nine, what are we losing?
Loss of fluids.
Okay, so if you're losing fluids, you're losing which pressure?
BHP.
Good. BHP is lost.
That's going to be hypertonic dehydration.
It is hypertonic, good. Dehydration. And in this situation, do cells shrivel or bloat?
Shrivel.
They shrivel. You like the stove.
If only the rest of us could see.
There's a good bit of this stuff on there, so. Yeah.
That's a good one, so.
And last one down there, number 10, glomerulonephritis is loss of blood proteins. It's basically inflammation of the glomerulus. Losing blood proteins is losing which pressure?
BOP. Hypotonic
dehydration.
Capillary.
Good. Capillary to the IF to the ICF. Good.
Because the essays were like these.
I think I might have one on there for you, but they're all scattered throughout multiple choice. So
I have a question. Like,
sure.
Number 10.
Okay.
If you didn't have the words in parentheses, I wouldn't be able to answer it. Are you going to have these words? The loss of blood energy.
In most situations, yeah. Where I won't put them is where, like, we know diabetes is a fluid loss issue. We know aldosterone deals with salt. Yeah, so they're
ADH.
ADH is water. Yeah. Most of the time I'll give you clues, but for those kinds of things, I won't.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. I'm going to leave page 125 for you. If you have looked ahead at 125, are there any problems there you'd like to talk through? In most cases, I'll give you a clue. I expect you know about diabetes is loss of fluid, ADH is fluid, aldosterone is salt. So if it's something we've specifically learned, I won't give you a clue, but like quasicor, we didn't talk about that, so I'd give you a clue for one of those. Hepatitis, we really didn't talk about loss of proteins. I'll give you a clue. So yeah, don't memorize the list. I'll give you clues for those things that you have not been exposed to.
So that first one we just said is basically another word for starvation?
Basically, yeah. And even people who are alcoholics can have that. It's basically not eating, and their bellies swell because of the fluids that accumulate in that interstitial space.
So that would explain why after they get up to hangover, they always sit hungry.
Probably, yeah. And if they're consistently drinking alcohol, then the fluids have no way to be pulled back into the capillary. Yeah. All right, so page 125 actually is the last page for the test. And I know a lot of you had questions on urinary stuff, so where would you like to go back from urinary? There's a lot of stuff there, yeah.
What's commonly missed is what we want to go over.
I find in the past, the beginning stuff like blood flow, if I ask you to put your blood flow next, people can keep that straight. But if you have to decide when something's filtered versus reabsorbed versus secreted, then that's where people get stuck. So
is that like the chart?
That is the chart, and that's the picture we drew out on the board.
Okay.
So maybe we should hit that again. I'm going to erase. Anybody need a picture before I erase? A little bit. Most of it's like, I'm filtering this. Where does it go next? I'm reabsorbing it. Where does it go? That kind of thing.
So it's
going to
be more of
this?
Yeah, I think you guys have probably hit the anatomy mostly in lab. Yeah.
So from renal artery to so this is 2 and 3. The tracings. Because this is the first one, so this is
2 I saw you. 2 is 3
Okay, so the other one's 3 and 4.
114 has 2 blanks. 114 has 2 blanks. Glomerulonephritis is inflammation of the glomerulus.
What page did you say?
114. Glomerulonephritis is inflammation of the glomerulus, and diabetes insipidus is lack of ADH. Y'all good? Anybody else need the board before I erase? So let's see. Where are y'all at? Are y'all on page 106, 107, somewhere in that neighborhood? We start with page 106 and we'll just run through 107, 108, and 109. How about that? Okay. Okay. So there's three main processes that take place in your nephron. That is the functional unit of the kidney. The first major process is filtration, and that occurs in the glomerulus. We sometimes call it glomerular capillaries. The interesting thing about these capillaries is they're unlike other capillaries. They're actually fed and drained by arterioles. Normally, what is draining a capillary bed? A vein. Yeah, so a venular vein drains capillaries, but not in this case. And the whole reason for this is to maintain a high pressure inside the glomerulus. We're looking for high hydrostatic pressure. Is that the pressure that pushes or pulls?
That's the pushy.
That is the pushy pressure, right? So when you take into account the high hydrostatic pressure, the glomerular osmotic pressure, and the capsular pressure, which is fluids pushing to get back in the capillary, we end up having a net filtration pressure here of about what?
10.
You're right, those units are millimeters mercury. Now, if you happen to have low blood pressure, there are specialized cells sitting right next door, kind of in a triangular shape. And those specialized cells are called the JGA. If you have low blood pressure, they release a chemical called
renin.
Good. What mechanism do we just turn on? Angiotensin 1 is now made, angiotensin 2, and that now tells your efferent arteriole to constrict and will hopefully help increase the glomerular filtration rate and the pressure inside that capillary network. What two hormones do you end up turning on?
Aldosterone.
Good. Aldosterone and ADH. Good. And where do they exert their effects?
DCT.
Good. Alright, so what we're trying to do is maintain a filtration rate in the glomerulus. We're hoping to filter about how much blood plasma per minute? 120 milliliters per minute. So we have a choice to make here. At the glomerulus, we have the choice to filter items or to let them just continue on a ride through the nephron. The items that are filtered out of the glomerulus pass into this capsule and into what region of your tubule?
The prop, the PCT.
PCT, good. So these items that you filter out, they're mostly blood plasma. You know, it's fluids, electrolytes. It's even a little waste products. It's even good stuff like glucose and amino acids. So instead of saying the blood plasma is traveling in the renal tubule, we're going to change the name and say it's called filtrate now. So there are some things that we don't filter, though. We have no need to filter blood cells or what?
Or proteins.
Or proteins. So instead of filtering them and moving them into the PCT, where do they go instead? Afferent arterial, peritubular capillaries. They go back to the venules. And then how do they get out? Cortical radiate vein, arcuate vein, interlobar vein, and renal vein. Good. So we have no need to filter out big stuff like blood cells or proteins. So they're not part of the filtrate. They're going to continue traveling in that efferent arterial. So filtrate contains a lot of good stuff, stuff we actually want to reclaim back into the bloodstream. Now if you follow this afferent arteriole, it actually wraps around your PCT, it wraps around your nephron loop, okay? And so it gives us an opportunity to reclaim back some items into the bloodstream that we would like to keep. So when we talk about reabsorption at this PCT, where do we move those items that we want to keep? Move them from the PCT back into the peritubular capillaries. Okay, so when you reabsorb here, when you're reabsorbing items here at your PCT, that says to me that we want these items. The way you keep them is to get them out of the renal tubule, because the renal tubule ends up dumping you into urine. So we got to get it back in the bloodstream if you want to keep it. So these items move from the PCT to the peritubular capillaries into a venule. The next step is a cortical radiate vein. And then I think you probably have a pathway back to that renal vein. So what are some of the items that you're going to reabsorb here into the piece from the PCT to those capillaries? Water, salt, glucose. You're right, a certain amount of glucose. And who's the ringleader?
Sodium.
Yeah.
All except amino acids.
All except amino acids, right. Call this obligatory reabsorption, meaning what? Get it whether you need it or not, right? So sodium is the ringleader here in the PCT. When it's reabsorbed, we move also water, chlorine, glucose, bicarbonate ions, and then amino acids do their own thing. They're not coupled up with that sodium reabsorption.
So all of them are obligatory?
All of them are obligatory.
What'd you say obligatory means?
Take it, you've got to take it whether or not you need it. You just have to reabsorb this stuff. You can adjust how much you reabsorb of these items. You know, bicarb, for instance, will make your blood more basic. So if you need it to make your blood more basic, you can actually increase your reabsorption of it here. Okay. Glucose is another one that's kind of got some special parameters. How much glucose can you reabsorb back into the bloodstream at this PCT?
180 max.
180 max, right. So blood sugar that's 300, well, everything above 180 is passed along in the urine, so we lose that excess. What's that?
120 is left over, it's going to go on out.
The 120 is going to go on out, that's right. Okay, so let's hit this from the top. When blood flows into a glomerulus, it's traveling along an afferent arteriole into the glomerulus. At the glomerulus, we're going to filter things out. That means we may filter good stuff and bad stuff, and we'll eventually have to sort through it and decide what we want to keep. So at the glomerulus, we force out fluids in the blood plasma, electrolytes, glucose, amino acids, sodium, good. And we should not be filtering out bigger stuff like what?
Like blood cells and proteins.
Blood cells and proteins. So their next step after the glomerulus will be the efferent arteriole. It will not be a step that takes us into the PCT. So if you see blood cells and blood proteins coming into the PCT, that is not the way, right?
Something's wrong.
Something's wrong, yeah. So probably an infection. So blood cells and proteins, their pathway is to travel through to the efferent arteriole. They then form the peritubular capillaries, and then they're going to go on out to the rest of the venous pathway. All right, so those items that we do filter and are capturing here in the PCT, instead of calling it lost blood plasma, we change the name and now call it filtrate. Okay, so we have an opportunity to reclaim some of this stuff back in the bloodstream at the PCT. And we're going to have a couple more opportunities as we travel on. What special activity occurs here in this loop?
The water is reabsorbed.
Good. Descending, you just reabsorb water. All right, so you're right, going down the descending limb. We only reabsorb water. And coming up the ascending limb, we only reabsorb
sodium and chlorine.
So why separate these two? What normally happens when you've got salt present?
When you got salt present, water will follow the salt.
Right, and so you really don't want water to follow salt right now. You want to say, let's do salt by itself and let's do water by itself. And the reason for this is to adjust how salty your filtrate is. It will impact our reabsorption abilities later on. So this is kind of a fix-it opportunity, and then you're going to get over further into another opportunity later on to reabsorb.
I have a question.
Sure.
How does all this reabsorption take place? Like, is it diffusion? Is there actual, like, I know with reabsorption in the PCT, it's in the peritubular capillaries, but is there actually an opening? Or is it just kind of, because I know you have, like, the dots, but is it?
Protein channels for most of it, yeah.
Okay.
You know, if you've got sodium, you have to have a sodium channel. Water has to have an aquaporin channel. Some of this is by facilitated diffusion, where it moves along a gradient from high to low.
Some of it's active transport.
A little bit of everything, yeah. But you're right, in most cases, there has to be some kind of channel. Almost all of this stuff is too big to pass through just a capillary wall without some kind of protein channel. Yeah. All right, so we're looking to take our filtrate from the loop next into the DCT.
That's where the amino acids are.
They are taken back in the PCT.
I thought the amino acids were absorbed later on.
We actually take them here. They're just not coupled with sodium. Okay. All right, so we're still dealing with filtrate, and it's kind of a last opportunity to take what you want. And so we're still doing some reabsorption down here, but most of the reabsorption at the DCT is hormone driven. So let's talk about some of those hormones. Aldosterone, ADH,
PTH,
good. Under what conditions might you need more sodium? So under what conditions might you need more sodium? Low blood pressure, good, good. You may have low blood sodium. That could be another issue for us. What mechanism turns on the presence of aldosterone at your DCT? What mechanism turns on aldosterone at the DCT? That's it, renin-angiotensin. Good. Not only does the renin-angiotensin mechanism turn on aldosterone, it also activates ADH. What does ADH now reabsorb?
Water.
Good. And PTH, if present, will help you reabsorb?
Calcium,
good.
But that would happen too often because calcium's abundant in the body.
It is, but if your blood calcium levels are low, then you may end up reclaiming it from the urine. Okay, so when we talk about reabsorption, let's take one of these items. Let's take calcium. Calcium may have came in through your afferent arteriole. It came through your glomerulus. And when we say it was filtered, you assume it goes where next? PCT. And then from the PCT, it didn't get reabsorbed, so it keeps traveling, goes down and back up this loop. Still not reabsorbed, right? So it passes from the loop of Henle to the DCT. If PTH is sitting there, it's like somebody at the airport with a sign for you, and it says, okay, calcium, now's your opportunity. You get to come back in. So now calcium moves from the DCT to peritubular capillaries, and now where? A venule?
Cortical
radiate vein, arcuate vein, interlobar vein, and renal vein, right. So if you're talking about reabsorbing these items, they're going to go back into the bloodstream. Once you hit peritubular capillaries, you're on your way into that blood flow pathway. Okay. So anything who is left in that filtrate, you know, if we didn't reabsorb some water, if we didn't take back some sodium, that filtrate continues on to go where next?
Collecting ducts.
Collecting ducts. Good.
That valve would be like the end of a line.
You're looking at the end of a line, yeah. That looks like a Hershey's Kiss, but it's not. It's a urine dripping from the bottom. But yeah, you're right. Once you make it this far, you're running out of opportunity.
That's the end of the roller coaster.
It is in, yeah. So we called it plasma in the bloodstream, we called it filtrate in the renal tubule, and then when it comes out of the dripping tip of this renal papilla, it's now urine. Okay. One last chance here to get rid of stuff that we didn't filter is a process called secretion. So let's hit that one too.
So the only things that are reabsorbed through the DCT or that go to the DCT would be the salt, water, and calcium.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so reabsorbed items come from the tubule to the capillaries. What happens to secreted items? Where are we secreting them from?
Blood,
yeah. Okay, so mostly what we secrete is junk, garbage, trash, stuff we don't want, waste products. You know, sometimes they're filtered and reabsorbed, and then our body goes, hey, how'd you get back in the bloodstream? We've got to get rid of you. So down here, we finally end up discarding that stuff. So secretion into the DCT includes a lot of our waste products. So what are some things that you may secrete?
Potassium.
Good.
Hydrogen.
Those are controlled by aldosterone, yeah. So if you take back in sodium here for reabsorption, you're going to exchange it with potassium to be secreted. Okay.
Like getting three sodiums and don't.
Yeah, it's that 3-2 ratio, right. If you're dumping hydrogens, what was wrong with the blood pH?
Acidic.
Means you are acidic, yeah, acidosis. So the more hydrogens you dump means you had a really acidic problem. The more basic it will become, right? The more you dump it out, the more basic your blood becomes.
That would be during the time when you would start absorbing the bicarbonates.
That's right, because that'll happen at the same time. You're right. Good. We also get rid of waste products like urea and uric acid. And you're right, creatinine. Okay. So urea and uric acid are protein and nucleic acid waste products. Creatinine comes from muscle metabolism. So again, these are all just garbage your body wants to get rid of. So at this point, it'll be dumped from the blood into the tubule, and then your next stop is the collecting duct. And
then on out.
And then on out, yeah. Go to the renal papilla next, minor calyx, major calyx, renal pelvis. You know, there you go, back to the ureter, bladder, and urethra. Okay. So what I would probably recommend is using a picture like this to study by, and when you talk about an item that's reabsorbed, take it on its flow pathway. It's a great time to practice the four patterns, flow patterns, in the bottom of 105. How about questions here? Come on. You got a question? I'll get out of the way.
I'm confused.
Because
it ends up
at the end.
It has to
then
it starts.
Exactly.
So it's like the
two
places at the airport. They're not standing at the sign for you.
Okay.
And so it'll finish at the.
Arterial becomes the peritubular capillaries.
Okay.
So
sodium, water, chlorine, all those go to the efferent arterial, then the PCT? So I thought you said that the ablucatory reabsorption were those items, and those go straight to the PCT, but you said the other items we don't need are go to the efferent arterial.
Blood cells,
right?
And proteins,
yeah.
Go to the efferent arterial.
Yeah. Blood cells,
okay.
And proteins.
They don't need to be filtered
because
they're too big.
That's right, they need to be filtered. So when they're traveling, they're just going on a joyride. Now they're in the peritubular capillaries next. Okay. So yes, it's the efferent arterial becomes the peritubular capillaries, which dumps into a venule later on.
Basically, the ride's over for them before they really start.
Yeah, I mean, they're just going through on a joyride on the vessels, and that's it. So let's take sodium for instance. Is sodium normally filtered? Is sodium normally secreted?
It's filtered.
And you know this because?
Because because it's small enough to go through the membranes?
It's small, okay? And if it's being reabsorbed, the only way to be reabsorbed is to have ever been filtered in the first place, okay? So let's take sodium. It comes from your afferent arteriole, your glomerulus. Because it's filtered, its next step is PCT. Let's say it didn't get reabsorbed in the PCT. Its next step is descending limb. And then it didn't get reabsorbed here, so its next step is the ascending limb. And then let's say it goes over here to the DCT, and sitting there is aldosterone. Going to get you, yes. Yeah. So now it's going to come back from the DCT into a blood network. The vessel it's reabsorbed into is called peritubular capillaries, right? So now we've got that sodium back. From the peritubular capillaries, it travels to the venule, cortical radiate vein, arcuate vein, lobar vein, renal vein. Okay, so you've got it back at this point. Let's take a sodium that is filtered and not reabsorbed. It comes from the afferent arteriole. It's filtered at the glomerulus. It travels to the PCT next. What is its next step? It's not reabsorbed.
Then it's going to go into the loop of the hemi.
Descending limb.
Then
ascending limb. Good. Not reabsorbed. Straight to the collecting duct and out. So renal papilla, minor calyx,
major calyx,
renal pelvis, ureter, bladder, good, and urethra. That's it. Okay. Let's see. How about potassium? Do you normally filter and reabsorb potassium, or do you normally secrete potassium?
Secrete potassium.
Secrete it. So what does that mean? Its ultimate destination is your blood or your urine?
Urine.
So you move it into the renal tubule by way of which capillaries? Peritubulars, yeah. So they may go through, those creatinines may go through a joyride at the glomerulus, but they're not going to be filtered there. They should end up going out that other exit route. Let's see. If there is no aldosterone, no ADH, and no PTH present at the DCT, what happens to your sodium, water, and chlorine that's in your filtrate?
It's going to go out.
Go on out. Your next step is collecting duct, renal papilla, and then so far, you're going out through the kidneys. Good. Let's see, if your blood sugar levels are 350, how much of it can you reabsorb?
180.
And where does this take place?
At PCT, that is reabsorbed.
At the PCT, good. What should have more sugar, your afferent arteriole or your efferent arteriole?
Say that again.
Where should you have more sugar in the blood, afferent arteriole or efferent arteriole? Afferent, yeah. Because what happens to most of that sugar at the glomerulus?
It's going to be filtered.
It's going to be filtered, yeah. And do you reabsorb into the efferent arteriole?
No, it's too small.
Yeah, you don't reabsorb there. You reabsorb, if you do, into the peritubular capillaries. Okay.
Even then, you can only reabsorb 180.
And then you can only reabsorb 180, exactly. Let's see. Under what conditions might you reabsorb more bicarbonate?
Whenever your blood pH is very acidic.
Whenever you're in acidosis, right? Whenever pH is too acidic. And if you're reabsorbing more bicarbonates, what are you doing with your hydrogens down here?
You're dumping them into the collecting ducts and going out.
Good. Dump them into the collecting ducts. That's called
secretion.
Good. Secrete more of those hydrogens.
Can you say that one over and over?
Sure. If you're too acidic, what do you do with your bicarbonates at the PCT?
You reabsorb.
Reabsorb more. Because if you're too acidic, the bicarbs are basic, and that will pull your blood pH back up. And at the same time you're reabsorbing more bicarbs, what are you doing with your hydrogens?
You're dumping them through secretion in the collecting duct.
Dumping them, that means you're secreting them into the collecting duct, and they're going to leave the body in what? In the urine, yeah. So get rid of those hydrogens by secreting them. You're pulling acid out of the bloodstream, and the blood pH can then also return up to its normal level.
So for secretion, what you're basically saying is that's just another word for getting rid of it in the collected blood.
Yes, secreting means get rid of it. Yeah. Reabsorbing means I want this. Secrete means I don't. It's garbage. Get rid of it. Yeah. All right. So where does countercurrent multiplication occur? Descending and ascending, loop of Henle. Good. And the whole purpose of doing this?
Separate the water from the sodium.
Mm-hmm. Separate water from sodium and reabsorb them separately. And that way you've got the right saltiness in your filtrate. Okay. So on which limb do you reabsorb sodium and chlorine?
Ascending
limb. Good. And of course, water on the descending limb. I feel a little better about this today. Okay. You may want to just redraw and talk yourself through. This is probably a good way to study for a big chunk of that urinary material.
Is this session recording?
It is recording, yeah.
Should we need
it? I would definitely know about the lube, yeah. Water flows on the downside, salt on the upside.
Okay, and do we need to know that it's like a full 50% of the water and 2/3 of
it? Oh, don't worry about the percentages.
Okay.
Yeah, just know water on the down and salt on the up.
So basically, most of the urinary system, and all times we know that this chart probably got the vast majority of it.
You've got the majority, yeah. I can just read through the other parts, like having to deal with ureters, bladder, urethra. That was pages 112 to 114. Just don't forget about those.
So really don't need to touch too much on the anatomy. It's more physiology.
I think you guys have had the anatomy in lab. You've had it again in here. I don't think I'd spend a lot of time on it. I think I'd spend my time on this.
Okay.
And pages 124, 125. And if I can help you, let me know. If you decide to take the test early, let me set it up for you.
Can we take it late?
I wish.